and I was really hooked from the very beginning. I loved being able to go places where I wouldn't otherwise.
I just couldn't stop asking questions, and I think that probably we all have stories like that.
JFK Jr. saluting his father's casket. That is my grandfather's photo. So I grew up in a family where journalists were valued and journalism was considered, you know, fun and noble. And when you're raised that way, it's very easy just to go into that profession.
Now, from WGN Radio News, a look back at the day that was and a deeper look into issues and stories with Andrea Dollars and the reporters on 720 WGN.
Good evening, 7-Eleven on 720 WGN. Thank you so much for being with us and braving the cold and the crazy stuff going on Lakeshore Drive with the bridge, the story we've been following all day. I am so excited to have three amazing personalities in studio tonight. Three men who have really made their mark on Chicago, in Chicago as journalists, reporters, and on-air personalities, and community activists, too. I mean, everybody knows who they are. They're John Hansen, Maze Jackson, and Jeremy Gorner. You guys, welcome so much to the studio.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us here.
Thank you for being here. So I'm going to ask each of you to tell me just a little quick bio about you, John. And we work together here at WGN, but you are the morning man on the jam.
Yeah, I work at WCIU, the jam. Mornings 6 to 8 a.m. as a weather man and wear many hats. A game show host some days. Guy on the street just trying to make you smile. And I work here at WGN Radio filling in too.
Well, we're so happy to have you. Maze Jackson, you and I met at the Publicity Club panel and you blew me away. You were so good and so funny. I know you're a political strategist, you're a media personality, you're a marketing pioneer. Tell us about yourself.
You know what? So thank you for all of that.
It's true.
My name is Maze Jackson. I'm the host of the WVON morning show. I'm on 6 to 9 every day, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9. I am, I'm not a journalist. I want to be clear. Mm-hmm. I am a political operative and lobbyist who just happens to have a radio show in which I share some insights.
Yes.
So I do not, I am very opinionated. I am not.
That's okay.
I'm biased.
That's okay. We had John Cass on a few weeks ago, and I made it very clear from the beginning. I said, Cass is a columnist. Will Lee is the journalist.
Right.
So we had to, pull out the whip a couple of times, but
yes.
No, and that's why I'm glad you're here as well too, because you bring so much to the table.
Thank
with
you for
everybody
the opportunity.
Else. I'm glad you're here. Jeremy Gorner is a name synonymous with the Chicago Tribune. Love your background. We're gonna get in all your backgrounds too. I know journalism is in your blood, and if there's any sort of a crime story or anything, Jeremy Gorner, you will always be tweeting the story, tweeting it online, Facebook, and writing it. So. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I've been told I need to be more active on Twitter. So I'm the beat reporter for the Chicago Police Department. So I cover crime, a lot of street crime, a lot of police policy, police accountability, kind of all across the board, anything dealing with law enforcement in Chicago, but mainly the Chicago Police Department.
I see your byline at all hours of the night, 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock.
It's a very busy, competitive beat.
Yeah.
Say the least.
And you're in the category of those of us who know the best bathrooms in the craziest locations and the best food.
Food, maybe. Bathrooms, bathrooms kind of, but no, the food definitely.
Right.
I discover something new every day when I'm out there. So
we're going to delve into all of your backgrounds and what made you just become part of this profession that we are so lucky to be a part of every single day, either talking on the radio or writing for the newspaper, being on television. You know, we have our hand, we think on the pulse of the community, and it's a great profession to be in. And I wanted, as I said, we're going to get into your backgrounds in a little bit. But I think we should start out talking a little bit about the news of the day. And I know the big story was Lakeshore Drive and the bridge, but I really am completely enamored with the mayor's race right now, how it's shaping up. We've never seen anything like this, 14 candidates now in this crowded field. Anytime you watch a debate or there's a forum, it's like they're all hurry up and waiting, so you know they get their 2 minutes to answer, and then because there's so many candidates, you got to wait 15 minutes before your next response. So I'm just curious how you guys think this is shaping out. It started one way where you had the pre-ROM announcements and now the post-ROM announcements, and it's getting down and dirty. What do you guys think?
You know, can I jump in there?
Please.
I would say I think there's two phases here.
Yeah.
Because I think we had the pre-ROM announcement and the post-ROM announcement. Then we had Burke. Pre-Burke.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Burke Solis. And then post-Burke Solis. And I think that is probably what is going to, which right now is probably what has shaped had the most impact on what is going to be the outcome of this race right now.
Absolutely. What do you guys think?
Well, I think it's interesting that 2015 was our first mayoral runoff ever in Chicago. It was almost like a primer for what we're going to see here this year, here in 2019. I think it's interesting. For me, it's the candidates all represent different views, but it'll be interesting to see. I'm a numbers guy on election night. I love crunching down who's voting for who and what in which ward, which race demographics are voting for who. And it's really, I think, a race to what percentage is going to get you to that top two. There's no doubt this thing is running to a runoff. If it's in that 12, 13, 14% range, it's a real wide open race. But if we're looking at it, you need 20, 22, 23%, depending on how the voting block goes. It'll be just fascinating to see who that second person in is. I mean, and the first person. I think there's some clear front runners, but it depends on, you know, if the blocks get split up in many different ways. Who is going to sneak in those top two spots? Mm-hmm. And then the race takes on a whole 2 month transformation. Then it gets dirty, really dirty. And then that'll be fascinating to see. But this first phase is fascinating.
It is.
And I was just going to say, John, it's not going to end there because and I saw this in 2011 when Rahm was first elected and he chose Gary McCarthy to be a superintendent. That was the first time in I think a couple decades that you saw a new mayor in office and a new police superintendent in office. There's a potential, a very real possibility. We know there's going to be a new mayor, but, you know, there could be a new police chief. I mean, who knows? I mean, Eddie Johnson hasn't said one way or the other what's going to happen. And
right.
Some candidates have kind of made their point about what they want to do. But, I mean, there's, you know, more than a dozen candidates in the field. So it's unclear what their plans will be as far as if Johnson will stay or go. But the point is you could see a totally different landscape in the city, you know, regardless of who's chosen.
I said off the air what I found interesting, because we've been watching these forums as you guys have as well, and the debates, and the, you know, as I said, it takes one answer and then 15 minutes until the next candidate can answer again. So there's a lot of people up there on stage or during these forums at any given time. And they asked an interesting question last week. I think Anna DeVlantis actually asked the question, if you couldn't vote for yourself, who will you vote for? And I was surprised that more than half said Amira Enya. And I said to Mays, you were kind of surprised at this. I said, I wouldn't be surprised if she popped ahead at some point with that young vote.
And, you know, and I think that what we've got to look at is really, will that young vote turn out in this election? Mm-hmm. I think we saw a lot of everybody is kind of caught up in the last election, but I think it was a referendum on Donald Trump. I think this election, people are exhausted. I think I saw a report today from the Board of Elections that said only 1,700 people have voted at the supersite right now. And so I don't see, with 2 weeks to go, with 14 people in the race, I would have thought we would have seen a lot more excitement, a lot more enthusiasm. I'm going to tell you, for as many people that are running, I think this is pretty dead right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think a lot of people are still making up their minds.
I think so,
I know
too.
As a Chicago voter, I am. And I'm really on the fence of a few different candidates. There's one day, there's one message that I kind of latch to and I like, and then I do a little bit more of my own independent research. And really, there's so many. Each candidate has, I think, glaring weaknesses and broad strengths that they have. And it's just fascinating to see, you know, it's machine versus not machine, trying to stay away from the machine, but trying to clutch to the machine in certain spots too, where the get out the vote matter efforts will matter. I think it's going to really come down to the ground game and really the communities the next 2 weeks leading up to what's happening in these communities. I know Amara Enya threw, there was a party with Chance the Rapper yesterday.
Right.
And I think those sorts of things might make the difference in terms of just getting the ground game going.
Just getting the people out.
You know, so I'm going to put on my political hat here.
Do it. This is where I go to a political operative.
And I think that you have, ground game is really about consistency. I see these things that pop up, but who has the ability to identify their voters, know who they are, know where they are on election day,
right,
and then bring them out? I think it's one thing to stand in the middle of Daley Plaza and say, hey guys, come on, there's a party and there's a DJ. But when there's no DJ, when there is no Chance, and you've got to get people to the polls and it's a rainy, cold day, who has the ability to do that? And that is where I start to ask questions. I think that we're caught up in kind of like the if we could. And I think what happens in the black community is we look at flawed candidates and then we kind of say, well, if this happens, and then we add a little of this, and Jesus comes back, right. then we can, right. then we're going to win this race. Right. And I think that there are some fundamental signs that I don't see in a lot of campaigns that are signs of healthy campaigns.
I think you guys hit the nail on the head, though, too. People do, most people, I would go out on a limb and say, they don't know who they are going to vote for. I mean, I live in the city. John, you do. I think you guys do as well.
Yeah.
I don't know yet. I really don't. And the numbers are so low right now. The poll over the weekend was Daily Preckwinkle Chico, but it's like 14, 13, 12.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my gosh. It barely double digits.
All right, just growing up here, you look at the lowest common denominator, you know, who watches the news, whatever, you know. And I remember growing up as one of those people just like, you know, if I see a lot of campaign ads for a particular candidate, I'm going to think, oh, wow, this is the person who's going to do it. And then they would just get destroyed. I mean, there's just so many variables out there. And especially with so many candidates in the field, actually remembering what each person stands for, trying to figure out who stands out and, you know, over whom and why. It's, you know, I can't remember the last time I've seen such a field like that.
Yeah, I'm scared. I'm going to be honest with you.
Are you really?
I am nervous because I feel like we're going to have all of these people, and on election day, 14 candidates, and I may have heard from each one of them a total of 30 minutes.
Right.
I can probably tell you what each one of them says, but I don't know very much substantively about them.
Right.
And so we're not going to necessarily get the best two candidates, but we're going to have to pick from what was left. And I'm concerned about really who does manage this monstrosity with the pensions and with everything else that's going on. And I'm just nervous.
There's a lot to manage. There sure is in the city. We're talking to Jeremy Gorner, Maze Jackson, and John Hansen on Andrea and the Reporters. Coming up after the break, we're going to learn more about these guys, where they grew up, why they decided to enter the media. All coming up next on 720 WGN.
Let's get back to Andrea Dallas and the Reporters on 720 WGN.
725, 720 WGN. We're talking to Jeremy Gorner, Maze Jackson, and John Hansen on Andrea and the Reporters. We got a news break in just a little bit, but I want to get into a little bit about how you guys got into this business. John, what was your first job in the business?
Well, I grew up in Downers Grove, went down to the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign.
ILL.
I and I.
All right.
Well, there we go.
Sorry.
And I went there thinking I was going to be a history teacher. I love history. I love political science.
Really?
But as a kid, I always had a camera. My parents gave me a camera as a kid, just a little beat up one with a VHS tape you'd do in there. I would film everything, pretend to be a reporter. So after a year of college, my mom said, do you really want to? I mean, you could always be a history teacher. No disrespect. My mom was a public school teacher for 30 years in art. She said, why don't you try to do radio or TV? I know it's a tough business, but give it a shot. So my first job was at WPGU 107.1 in Champaign, Urbana. And out of college, I ended up working for that station as the station's GM and left politics for a while, or left, news for a while, went to work in Washington, D.C., worked in the Senate for a year, then came back here as a traffic reporter, and it all kind of gone from there. So.
And now you host the Business Lunch.
Yes, I fill in for Steve and anyone else.
And
anytime
GM.
Stephanie calls me, and then the jam. Yeah, I think my most transformative experience was working for DNA Info. I worked for them for a couple years, right when they were getting started, and got to tell their stories here on WGN. We started segments here and over at Fox as well. And to see those reporters and to really understand what local reporting really is, to walk the streets and the beats and talk to some great, talented journalists, changed my mind about kind of what I wanted to do every day, and now I get to do it.
I'm glad you do.
Thank you.
I'm glad you do. Maze, what was your first job in this business?
I was a promotions assistant at V103,
mm-hmm.
And I carried boxes, and eventually I was able to work my way into a job as the man on the streets. From there, I went on to, it didn't pay very well. I actually was making like $18,000 a year. So I was like, it was very hard to eat in during those very lean years. So I went on to, my goal in life was at one point to get paid off of hip hop. So I thought I was going to be the next Jay-Z or Puffy. And so I created.
There's still time.
I tell my kids in college that. They're like, Dad, stop. I still have moments when the mic comes around. But, I then went on to do some programs and really make my name in the world of urban marketing. And while I was doing urban marketing, Alderman Walter Burnett in the 27th Ward had a rap album that he was releasing, and I was representing Jay-Z at the time. And so he wanted the best promoter to represent his rap album. Imagine this Chicago alderman with a rap album.
Right.
And he calls me up and he says, hey, I want you to represent this album. And I'm like, dude, I represent Jay-Z and you want me to represent this rapper. But I heard him and I had a love of politics. And so we made a trade. I told him I would promote his album if he would teach me politics. And so he introduced me to politics. Fast forward, I managed his wife's campaign. I managed his campaign in 2003. I ran for alderman unsuccessfully in 2007. But I found a love of politics. And a lot of the things that I was doing in the urban marketing world were translatable to politics. And so I did it. And then eventually I went on to be the field director for Governor Pat Quinn in his very close election where he won by 5,000 votes.
Yeah.
From there, went on to become a lobbyist to the executive director of the Illinois Legislative Black Caucus, where I almost went crazy in Springfield and came home to become what is now the host of the WVON Morning Show.
Very cool. I love your path. I love all of your paths. Jeremy, what was your first gig in this business?
I grew up on the north side of the city, and my father was a reporter at the Tribune for 40 years. He, before he passed away, he was a science writer for many years at the newspaper. But, you know, growing up, I really didn't have a desire to get into journalism. I think he kind of discouraged it and wanted me to do my own thing. And
he wanted you to make money.
Exactly,
there you go.
Right.
And, you know, so even by the time I got into college, I mean, I had an interest in history and, you know, politics just because of, you know, that was just my guiding light in school. Like, that I was drawn to that more than, like, math and science. So I was a political science major at DePaul University. And after, like, 3 years, I still, you know, a year from graduation, I still didn't really know what I wanted to do when I graduated. Because, you know, I knew what my father did for a living, I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to join the school paper, the DePaulia. And after I saw my first article in print, you know, and you see your byline in print and, you know, all the space they've given to everything that you've written, I was just in awe and I was hooked. And I remember telling myself, you know, I could get paid doing this. This is something. Yeah. This is something I think I could get used to. This is a lot of fun. So it was a weekly paper. I, you know, was a, I think, pretty regular reporter for the DePaulia my senior year. I had an internship at, the Learner newspapers up on the north side. You know, they had a series of newspapers across the north and northwest sides and then the northern suburbs. I think Mike Royko at one time was a Learner alum.
Wow.
Obviously way before my time. I was there for probably about 3 months. And then when I graduated from DePaul, I didn't have a job lined up. But I ended up applying to the City News Bureau of Chicago, which is... Then it was a 100-year-old wire service. It was a famous boot camp for a lot of young journalists who went on to become full-fledged reporters in Chicago and all over the country. So I was there for about a year. I covered the police beat there. That's where they start you off on. Because when you think about it in journalism, the police beat is probably the most basic form of who, what, where, when.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
So I started out there, and, you know, the City News Bureau was like, AP, you know, they competed with every news outlet in the city, except we were beginners. And but we had different beats. We had a city hall reporter, which was considered like the plum gig at City News, the most experienced sure. reporter there. They had reporters who covered the courts, 26 in California, the Daily Center, suburban courts, and everybody else covered police. So as City News closed down, they were owned by the Tribune Company. They closed down at the end of 05. And then I went to the Trib and started work. They started a breaking news online desk, mm-hmm. which I used to see you all the time, Andrea.
Yeah, we were on the fourth floor at the Tribune Tower together. That's how we get to be friends.
Right. Yeah. I told John you worked across the street. Of course, I meant across the aisle.
Across the aisle.
Used to see you and Judy and Steve and all them. And then for about 8 years now, I've been on the police beat for the paper, just covering the beat pretty regularly.
Doesn't it still feel awesome to see your name?
Yeah.
On the front page with that byline.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I see it and I think it's cool, you know?
Right.
I know him. That's my friend.
That's probably the only self-serving aspect. I mean, you know, I've grown to love the job just because of the fact that we get to tell millions of people about what's going on, you know? And seriously, I mean, it's good to... It's great. I'm still going strong. Still love it.
Absolutely, so. It is. We're talking to Jeremy Gorner, Maze Jackson, and John Hansen. Quick break here for the news, and we will come back and find out the most influential stories and things that they've covered, things that they're still talking about, and what they're passionate about after this on 720 WGN.
It's Andrea Darlis and the reporters on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. Thank you, Don Kleppen. For the next 20 minutes, I have the honor and privilege of having some of the greatest reporters, honor personalities in Chicago. Jeremy Gorner with the Chicago Tribune, Maze Jackson with WVON, and John Hansen, WCIU, The Jam, and of course, WGN Radio are in studio with me. I wanted to ask you guys, I usually ask at this point, a story that really affected you or something that really was one of the greatest. I started out asking what are the greatest stories that you ever covered, but I know that's like asking you to pick your favorite child or, you know, your favorite parent, which is easier for some than others. But Jeremy, out of all your years of reporting, I know you kind of do the crime beat now, but has there ever been a story that's really stuck with you, either through following up or just really affected you?
Well, I mean, if you phrase it that way, a story that stuck with me, probably the Tyshawn Lee, the killing of Tyshawn Lee.
Yeah.
You know, just for listeners, I mean, Tyshawn Lee was 9 years old. He was shot and killed in an alley in Auburn Gresham on the south side. And what led up to his killing was basically a lot of the violence that we see in Chicago is retaliatory in nature. And this was kind of the quintessential case where you had... just shooting after shooting, you know, you had one opposing gang and another that had been just in conflict for years, and police were able to basically pinpoint, you know, which shooting begat what shooting begat what shooting, and then it all led to you know, Tyshawn's death.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, police at the time, and the other thing that was, you know, very disturbing about his death, especially disturbing about his death, is that, you know, he was targeted, and he's a little kid. Why would you, I mean, would you target anybody? But I mean, this is a little kid. And, you know, the police, of course, were, you know, had believed at the time that it was because of his father's gang involvement that led to his son's death, because his father, according to police, was involved in this, you know, longstanding gang conflict with another gang in the neighborhood.
Wow.
And so that was something that was very, that was highly unusual to see. And then I believe in that case they've charged three people who are sitting in Cook County Jail now awaiting trial. But yeah, I mean, that was, I mean, I've been interviewed about that case, and I mean, I remember, because I usually don't get this way, but I, you know, almost burst into tears when a news outlet wanted to, you know, talk about this case. And I can't really think of any other. I mean, there's everything we cover on the crime beat is sad, horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, and it gets to you, but I don't know, for some reason this was one that really bothered me. It bothered a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
People, even reporters I work with to this day
have
spoken about that.
Yeah, covering a story involving a child or, you know, a little kid like that, especially involved with violence, always hits close to home.
Yeah.
It's hard to write about, too, you know, because you try to keep your emotions separate.
Right, and when you cover crime and violence, and every reporter at some point in their career will cover crime and violence. I mean, you know, you do it often enough, and you like to think that you're desensitized to it because, I mean, that's our job, right, is to kind of separate our emotions from that. But, you know, we're human, too, and it's very, very hard at times to, you know, remember who you are in situations like that.
Maze, you have a little bit of a luxury of not covering crime, but you have your finger on the pulse of a lot of stories and a lot of issues. You've been in politics. You've covered politics. You've been all over the place as far as the city of Chicago in the neighborhoods. What stories drive you?
You know what? I'm going to tell you that I would say it sounds cliche, but I was actually on air during the Laquan McDonald tapes were released.
Right.
And so that probably was one of the most memorable. But I would tell you that it's a cycle. So I feel like it's one of the things that I cover the most is black while being black. And it's all of these examples of black folks being shot by the police, having police reported on them, having them being arrested for having barbecues, for doing just the basic things that are part of being an American. And I think that that is probably, I feel like the Laquan McDonald was the Mike Brown, was the, just all of these stories over the last 5 to 7 years that have just been examples of black people being black, doing common things or things that maybe should not cost you your life, but wind up costing your life.
Mm-hmm. Stories that still need to be told.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely. John, you have covered news. You've covered politics in D.C.
Yes.
You have a phenomenal fun job. Yes, phenomenally fun job on the jam. I saw you. I was biking one time on the bike path, and you were handing out hot dogs.
Yeah, I was probably grilling them up.
That's I think you were grilling them up.
That's the only time I've ever been told not to do that again. I was grilling up hot dogs leading up to the 4th of July. There was such a jam on the Kennedy Expressway, I decided just to go walk on down there and start handing them out. And that was the only time the boss has told me never to do that
on
live television.
Do that again,
don't
right?
walk on the Kennedy. No one was going anywhere. It was like Lakeshore Drive today.
Did Father Flager know?
Yeah.
You got to coordinate that.
I set the trend for that, actually.
Exactly right.
No, I'm very blessed right now to get to do mostly fun stories and fun experiences with a lot of great people. But there is a couple that stick with me. The one emotionally that sticks with me, last year I got to meet Matthew Shepard's parents, the young gay man who was beaten and killed in Wyoming back in 1998, who was maybe 2 years older than I was. And as a closeted 14-year-old at the time, I remember that story scaring the crap out of me, but also inspiring me to one day come out, because so many people rallied. Ellen came to his spoke at his funeral. This is before Ellen was had the Ellen DeGeneres show and all that, but it was heartbreaking and horrifying all at the same time as a teenager, knowing that I was gay. But it was to meet his parents 20 years later after his death and talk with them about that experience and just the crusade that they've been on working with President Clinton and then President Obama to pass the Matthew Shepard law, hate crime legislation, always being there for pride parades, whatever that was, just to hear their story about how they handled when he came out and how supportive way they were and how they sat at his bed for days and days knowing that he was going to die, holding on to hope that he wouldn't, and then him passing away. It was really impactful to talk with them. It was great. They were wonderful people to open up and share that story. But that one sticks with me just because it affected me as a kid, and then to touch it again 20 years later as a professional, it was interesting.
A story to revisit, yeah. Mm-hmm. And there are so many stories still to be told. I want to find out from each of you. We're talking to Jeremy Gorner, Mace Jackson, and John Hansen on Andrea the Reporters. I want to know what story that's still out there or topic, something that you're passionate about and something that you still want to follow up on that's still on your radar, and you're gonna get to the bottom of it. You're going to find out about it. That's coming up next on 720 WGN.
Back to Andrea Darlish and the Reporters on WGN Radio.
Thanks for being with us on the program tonight. We have Jeremy Gorner from the Chicago Tribune, Mays Jackson, the morning man at WVON, and John Hansen at WCIU, The Jam, and of course WGN Radio as well. I love our stories off the air, and sometimes I'll always say, oh my gosh, can we tell that story on the air? So Mays was just telling us a story about, I always wish we had more time so we can get into your backgrounds and where you grew up and what you guys were all like as little kids. And Mays was telling a story. Can I just have you tell that you were with the only black family to ever have gone to Dollywood?
We were talking about
the Grammys. That's how it
came
up.
We were talking about the Grammys and Dolly Parton's performance. And, I remember I Will Always Love You and Jolene and all those songs. So I was singing along and my wife was looking at me like, what the? Like, what black dude knows the Dolly Parton songs? But in my youth, growing up in Bolingbrook, my dad was the biggest Dolly Parton fan. And so I'll never forget my junior year, 1988, we were at our family reunion in Atlanta, Georgia, which is the mecca of blackness.
Yeah.
And my dad says, all right, guys, pack it up because we're headed out. And I'm thinking, okay, we're at the mecca of blackness at a black family reunion. And he says, we're headed out to Dollywood. Dollywood?
Awesome.
Now, can you imagine? Yeah, I just need for you to understand being an 16-year-old kid and you walk into Dollywood and it's like, and you're from Bolingbrook outside of Chicago. Let me just tell you, I think we were clearly the first black family to go to Dollywood. And it was clear, by the way, the people were looking at us and we were looking back at them that it, the feeling was
mutual. It was mutual, right?
Yes, like, oh my God. Are you from around, are you from around these parts?
I don't think so, right?
Like, you may be the last black family that's gone there too, actually.
No, I think they've upgraded now. Okay, I think I think Dollywood's now like the place to be.
Okay. I think you're okay, right? Oh God, I love these stories. What is I don't even know if it's a story or a topic. What is something that you are still passionate about, Maze, that you want to cover, or something that is still in your wheelhouse and you think, I'm either going to get to the bottom of this, or something, a story you're passionate about?
I am so passionate about this Burke Solis story, really, because I was kind of intimately involved from the standpoint that I worked at the Roosevelt Group when all of this was happening. And so I saw a lot of the players and I saw the meetings. And so I am looking forward to really peeling this thing down, peeling it apart, because I honestly don't think that the Sun-Times know, they've got the story, but they don't know what exactly how to put it together. And so I think that is, this Burke Solis thing is going to have, it is going to be bigger than Operation Silver Shovel, Grey Lord, all of that stuff. And I think it's going to reshape city council.
I think you're right. I think we're going to see a whole new city council come 2020 or maybe even mid-2019. John, how about you?
There's not a specific story, but one thing I love to do on The Jam and WCIU, and it probably stems from my work at DNA Info, is exploring what really happens in neighborhoods, the good news that happens in neighborhoods. I think for the most part, you go to any neighborhood in Chicago, no matter the crime rate, and probably 99.9% of people just want to live and be with their family and get through the day and come home from work okay and kiss their kids and all that stuff. And a lot of people are doing a lot of great things. So what I try and do, I do these neighborhood adventures. I like to, on the show, between 6 and 8. And I work with the community organizers or chambers of commerce, whoever I can, to give me, usually I have 9 or 10 reports between the Weathers and the other reports, in those 2 hours, to try and hit as many different outside, inside places that I can go. I just went to North Lawndale and explored a lot of places in that community. Some great urban farm stuff they're doing. Things that you wouldn't expect in different neighborhoods. North Side, South Side, West Side. So I think we've done about 9 or 10 of them, but I want to do all 77. Well, the 77 official neighborhoods, but as we all know, there's many, many more. All those break down into many other neighborhoods. So we're going to go to Austin. I want to go to Austin. I want to go to Englewood. And I've been to a lot of these, but I want to explore them on the show and just show Chicagoans that most of us are just everyday folks trying to make the best of what we can, and that there is a lot that does kind of bring us together and unite us and show those stories in a fun way.
I love that. And I love, you know, I up until a couple years ago, I still went to the same shoemaker in Pilsen, mm-hmm. family owned. They'd, you know, carried it down for generations. And I love that. You know, I'd always go in, they'd know my name. I wouldn't need a tag or anything like that. I'd come back 2 days later and everything would be fixed and perfect. I love that. Exploring small businesses like that in the communities and the restaurants too. I mean, because you can't get better restaurants than our neighborhoods.
Food is great, and just the new quirky things that are happening and the old things that are. I mean, we're a city of neighborhoods. We've been built like that since the beginning, since the fire and the expansion, and we used to identify as parishes. Now we identify still as parishes, but neighborhoods is a uniquely Chicago experience. I feel like other cities, the big cities, have neighborhoods, of course, but there's some pride about which intersection you live at that's different. And why across the street, oh no, that's not Humboldt Park, that's still Ukrainian, and there's fights about this sort of stuff.
Or why it's called Crawford and not Pulaski.
Yes.
My old neck of the woods.
And that's who we are as Chicagoans. It's so fun to get to tell those stories.
How about you, Jeremy? What's still out there for you?
So every year I compile a wish list of crime stories that I want to tackle, and I never get to them because there's just always something that comes up. But last year, you know, one story that I think that stood out that I'd like to kind of dig into more this year is just, you know, illegal gun prosecutions, not just on the state level, but on the federal level. I mean, you have a new Cook County State's Attorney, Kim Fox. You have a new U.S. Attorney, John Lausch, both relatively new. And so it'd be interesting to see, you know, if the pace of gun prosecutions changes. Especially last year, you know, we had four police officers who were killed in the line of duty. I mean, two who were killed with guns. The one that stood out to me, obviously, we had several stories about Commander Paul Bauer, mm-hmm. who was fatally shot downtown by the Thompson Center. And
almost
we actually,
a year ago today.
Yeah, February 13th of last year. And,
oh, wow.
And one of the, a couple of the big stories we covered that, you know, we were able to figure out where the gun that was used in the shooting came from.
Right,
you know,
tracking
where it was traced and all that. And, I mean, those stories, of course, you know, are, to me, you know, as a crime reporter, those stories I think are very interesting just because it goes to a lot of the problem of violence in the city, you know, where illegal guns come from. And it's also, the reason I want to cover it too is it's a very challenging topic because, you know, it's challenging because it's very sensitive and it's also very politically charged. You know, I mean, I remember getting emails from readers saying, well, let's not look at the gun that killed him. Let's look at why the guy who was arrested, Shamari Leggett, is a four-time felon. The system failed him itself. So, I mean, yeah, we want to look at all of that. But, I mean, there is a federal case that's still going on related to this gun and how it got into Illinois from Wisconsin. You know, that's still kind of ongoing that I'd like to track and see. And see if there's just anything more in general about, you know, the illegal flow of guns into Chicago and if there's anything more that we can write about there.
Well, keep writing because you're a phenomenal writer. Maze, I love listening to you. You got that beautiful voice and just full of knowledge about this city.
Don't tell the drive-thru because I hate pulling up in the drive-thru.
I'm sorry. It's so true. And, John, I love watching you. You guys are dear friends. And where can we find all of you on social media? Where can we hear you? And let's let everybody know where we can watch you.
At John, J-O-N, Hansen, H-A-N-S-E-N, TV, whether it's TV or radio, that's Instagram and Twitter. And 6 to 8 every morning on the U.
You can get me at Maze Jackson Said on Instagram, at Maze Jack, M-A-Z-J-A-C on Twitter, and you can get me on Maze Jackson on Facebook, 1690 a.m. every Monday through Friday, 6 to 9.
You ever going to run for alderman again?
No.
Mayor?
No.
Okay.
No, but I want to elect one.
I'm going to ask you again next year. Jeremy.
My Twitter handle's at Jeremy Gorner, and my stories are on chicagotribune.com.
You guys, thank you so much. This will be podcast tonight at WGNradio.com. Please come back again.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Never enough time.
Thanks,
you guys. Right. More after this on 720 WGN.